comment, and what is your demand right now? What are you asking of Senator Allen?
No, I think he should make a personal apology to me. That would be the decent thing for him to do. And I guess the point of this entire lesson, as Mr. Potok said, was just to show voters, you know, who the real George Allen is, and that this wasn't a one-time accident, that he has some history of doing this, and that people should be informed about that when come November.
And are you going to continue to follow Senator Allen with your video camera recording his events?
I'm actually back at school in Charlottesville, so for the moment, no, but I do plan to continue to work for Mr. Webb's campaign.
S.R. Siddhartha, I want to thank you for being with us at the University of Virginia studios. And Mark Potok, thank you for joining us, Director of Intelligence Project for the Southern Poverty Law Center. And that does it for today's broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Rich, and Aaron Matei, Frank Lopez, and Jen Utes. Mike DeFilippo and Nick Marsilio are engineers. Thanks also to Hugh Grant, John Randolph, Peter Yoon, Kieran Krug-Meadows, Megan Whitney, Danielle Stramberg-Peshkin, Samantha Chumbly, Angela Alston, and Uri Galed. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And this is Debbie McClatchy. And you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook.
And it's just about 6 o'clock, which means, once again, it's time for Off the Wall. And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening as we slowly but surely approach the end of summer. And I guess I'll be happy to see a change of some sort, as I usually am. And boy, what a week this has been. I swear, I think I learned a lot about myself this week. I have a propensity to shout at things. To shout at inanimate objects and things in the air and ideas and thoughts. And well, I think many of you probably reached the same stage, because this was the week that the whole JonBenet Ramsey story exploded yet again. And oh my God, it just here we are being subjected to it all over again. And for those of you who weren't around 10 years ago, You know, I think we did our penance then. We did enough. We were subjected day and night to the videotapes and to the interviews and to the analysis and the theories and conjectures about how this one poor kid got killed in their own home and who was behind it and who wasn't behind it and lie detectors and DNA and all sorts of things like that. It's unbelievable how much America cares about every single individual child. I guess this sure demonstrates it more than anything. But to have it happen again, to have it all come back, Larry King all the time on every channel, it seems, just interviewing somebody who may have at one point heard something somewhere that may or may not be true. You be the judge. You decide. And, oh. So, yeah, that got me yelling at the TV set and at the radio and at every newspaper I passed by that just featured this as a front page story. You know, I'm not saying this isn't important. Of course, when somebody is brutally murdered, that's something that should be a priority for those people who are in charge of solving such matters. But I gotta tell you, you know, looking at the story, the few minutes I could bear looking at it this past week, this guy is not the guy. Come on, look at him. How many times have you ever seen somebody go on international television and say, yeah, I did it. It was me. It was an accident. First of all, the fact that he said it was an accident, it goes against every bit of evidence that was presented in the past that showed torture. And torture usually isn't by accident, you know? We see a guy who seems to have a really insane fascination with the case and would like nothing better than to be a part of it, to be the front page, which is what he is now. So I imagine that's really the motivation here. It took a while for the media to start catching on to this, but these were the things that I saw as obvious right away. You know, as soon as somebody says, yeah, it's me, after 10 years of hiding out, it just seemed a little bizarre and weird right there. But then, to have the media frenzy just go in... First of all, why is it necessary for us to go back 10 years and watch the same stupid videos of this poor kid being trained to be Miss America or whatever her family was doing to her? Why do we have to go through that all over again? Why can't we just have a news story on television that says, you might remember this case 10 years ago, this little kid was murdered in her home. Well, this guy in Thailand claims he's the killer and now he's coming home. Something like that, you know? And then move on to the real news in the world, because there is real news in the world, lots of it, that we're ignoring, that we're not paying attention to. Why, I'll bet even today toddlers are being killed in their homes, and they may be of the wrong race or ethnicity or in the wrong country or something like that, and we're not paying attention to that. I think you could probably look in the Mideast and see all sorts of children being massacred and murdered and bombed out of existence. But no, this JonBenet Ramsey, there's something so alluring about that. We need to focus 80% at least of our news time on all the news channels to this one case. Granted, it's a bizarre case. Granted, the guy is a real Looney Tune. And we'd all sort of like to know what makes him tick. But come on already. You don't need to be covering it all the time. And these are the words that I was pretty much shouting all week long at any inanimate object that would listen. Get on with it already. Enough. Haven't we been tortured enough with all this? Tell us what happens with the case. Hopefully the authorities know what they're doing and aren't wasting everybody's time by having yet another carnival around this thing. But I realized, you know, it goes beyond that. It goes beyond yelling at TV sets. I'm sure we've all done that. I'm sure people are yelling at their radios right now. Can't imagine why, but people do. People yell at things that they hear. But, like yesterday, for instance. Well, first of all, yesterday was just a series of frustrations. I had to pick somebody up at an airport. And get this, I'm driving to the airport, right? JFK, from Long Island. And I get a call from my friend saying, hey, I'm here. It's like, you're a half hour early. My God, what... Why do they do this? Why can't they arrive on time? They arrive a half hour early. I'm still in Nassau County, so I have to drive through rush hour quickly so that he's not waiting forever. And so I get there. I get to the airport in record time. I've got the little smart car, so I'm able to, you know, to cut people off, and they don't even realize I have cut them off because it's so small. Sometimes they don't even see me at all. And I get to the airport, and I call back and say, okay, here I am. And he's like, yeah, you know, we're still on the plane. Because apparently when you arrive half an hour early, there's no gate. There's no gate for the plane to go to. So the plane has to sit out there in the middle of nowhere until something opens up. So then I was shouting at the heavens, saying, why? Why, oh why, do airplanes arrive half an hour early and then just sit there? What's the point? Why not just take more time in the air? Or if you know you're going to be a half hour early, which this plane probably knew, couldn't you work out a gate in advance or something? Wouldn't that be nice? And then on top of that, they kept him waiting on the plane for another 20 minutes. So on top of everything else, he was late. He was late after arriving half an hour early. I can imagine what was going on the airplane itself. You know, they've made things so uncomfortable and unpleasant on airplanes. They don't feed you anymore. I don't know whose bright idea this was. The airline food was not that great to start with, but it was something. It was something to pass the time. But now they have these stupid snack pack things that you have to pay $10 for, and it's garbage. I mean, there's a difference between getting free garbage and getting garbage you have to pay for. You know, nobody wants to pay for that. So you're sitting on a plane now, you can't eat anything. You can't drink anything because you can't bring liquids anymore. Everybody's looking at everybody else. The other day in, I'm not sure where it was. Was it Australia? Was it England? It was someplace. The passengers revolted and said, we're not staying on this plane unless you kick those two Asian-looking people off because they look suspicious and they're speaking in Arabic. You know, this is the kind of world that we're creating for ourselves. So yeah, flying is incredibly unpleasant these days. Imagine sitting in the middle of nowhere for 45 minutes after you've already arrived. You know, whatever happened to the days where the airplane opened up and you went down the staircase and you walked outside? Whatever happened to those days? You know, back in the 50s, I think that's how all airplanes disembarked. So, yeah. And that's the other thing about the JonBenet Ramsey. Not to beat a dead horse here, but it's something else that really got me frustrated. You know, they were actually telling us what the guy had to eat on the plane. They said that he had a glass of champagne. First of all, I don't understand. This guy is accused of capital murder. Why is he being given alcohol in the first class section? Or I think it was business class. It's, you know, I think in that case you can make an exception. You're you know, a horrible child murderer, or at least you say you are. So you know what? You don't get the champagne. I mean, in this day and age where we send people to Guantanamo Bay, where we engage in torture, where we invade countries that haven't done anything to us, is it really that bad a thing? Is it really that much of an invasion of someone's rights to deny them champagne after they commit murder? I don't think so. I don't think so, but that just could be my conservative leanings, which I guess are more and more pronounced with age. But okay, so the frustration continued beyond the airport because then once I had to drive all the way through Brooklyn to make another stop, and that was fine. That was... You ever drive all the way from one end of Flatbush to the other, Flatbush Avenue? It goes all the way through Brooklyn, and it's kind of cool because you see so many communities, you see so many different sections, you see so many people. And when you're in a smart car, people seem to be happy to see you. Everybody waves, everybody smiles, everybody points. So that's kind of nice. That always adds something to whatever you happen to be doing. In fact, if I could, I would suggest that anybody get a smart car just to brighten up their lives. These things can settle all sorts of issues. You know, bring smart cars. Here's my idea. Bring smart cars to Baghdad. Yeah, I know it sounds silly, but think about it. You start driving these things around the cities in the busy streets, and you get the Iraqis, you know, they'll come up to you and say, hey, American infidel, how you like the car? And you'll say, hey, it's a cool car. It gets 70 miles to the gallon on the highway and 40 or 50 in the streets here. And they'll ask all kinds of questions about how much it costs and if it's comfortable inside. And you'll part friends, you will. And then the U.S. Marines, they'll say, hey, dude, cool car. And what kind of mileage does it get? The same questions, basically. But you'll get smiles from everybody. And before you know it, nobody's blowing each other up anymore. They're comparing mileage statistics. That's what it's all about in the end, isn't it? The other day, 2 days ago, actually, I was in Manhattan. And I was driving up First Avenue, and this cop pulls up next to me. Now, I'm in the smart car, and the cop pulls up next to me. And he just asks me, so, how do you like that car? And I tell him the truth. I say, hey, it's great. I can park this thing anywhere. It gets great mileage. It's a whole lot of fun to drive. And we get into this big conversation, you know, the same questions. How much did you pay for it? Was it hard getting into the country? Things like that. Where are they going to be available here? And it's great. You know, it's great when you can talk to people who ordinarily you would view as adversaries or semi-hostile intent. Because face it, when you do see a cop coming down the street, you get apprehensive. You think, hey, am I doing everything right? Am I doing everything properly? Is he going to find some fault with me? Because it always happens. You see a cop go by on the highway. Inside of 2 minutes, he's pulled somebody over for something. They find fault with the tiniest things. And you feel the same way when you're walking down the street. At least I do, because, well, that's what happened to me when I was walking down the street once. I had kind of a bad run-in with them. In this particular case, though, it was nice and pleasant, nice, ordinary conversation. You realize these people are human beings. But the thing you really realize is that the conversation was extending onwards. The light turned green at the intersection. There were all these cars behind us. Nobody was honking. Not a single person honked. We're sitting there at the green light. I couldn't leave. I couldn't just pull ahead because the light was green, because while he may be a human being, he still was a cop. And, you know, you don't want to disrespect them too much. Especially when you're driving something that could be pulled over. So the conversation must have gone on a good 20 seconds into the light and nobody honked. And that's what happens when you're a cop. You can do things like that. You can sit at a green light and nobody will complain. I'll complain, though. You know, I'm the kind of person that if a cop doesn't go through a red light, I won't lean on the horn. I'll just go beep, you know, in case maybe you forgot, maybe you've drifted away or something. Here's a little reality check. I won't be annoying, but I will make sure that they're aware that something's going on. So, yeah, you know, 20 seconds go by, and finally the conversation ends. I was a little bit, I felt apologetic to the people behind me, but there was nothing I could do. There's nothing I could do. But, yeah, you're a cop. You get to do that. You get to go through red lights. You get to speed and make all kinds of noise and intimidate people. I see why people get drawn into that life. I really do. And I guess people join the military for the same reason. Because you get to run roughshod over people and have your way and get what sort of passes for respect. But getting back to the shouting at inanimate things, you know, I was just thinking about this the last couple of days, because as I was driving my friend from the airport, this idiot cut me off. Imagine that, cutting off a smart car. This guy was pulling a trailer. He had like a U-Haul thing, and he had a trailer in back of that. And I'm making a left turn onto a major intersection, and this guy sort of just passes right in front of me. Before I know it, he's in front of me, and I'm in the middle of the intersection. So I'm blocking traffic now because this bonehead has cut in front of me with his extra-long vehicle, and there's nothing I can do about it. So I start shouting, what a stupid jerkhead, oh, damn it. And of course, he can't hear me. Maybe he can see me waving my arms or something like that. But I realized, you know, what am I yelling at exactly? I'm yelling at the guy, but he can't even understand anything I'm saying. But it's a good way to sort of vent, to let forth with your emotions. I think it's an important thing to do, to yell at the TV set, to yell at the radio, to yell at the idiot in front of you who can't see you. I yell at traffic lights. I was driving home last night. I kept hitting all these traffic lights I don't normally hit on the Wisconsin Highway. It seems something's gone wrong with the electronics, and where they're usually green, they decide, hey, you know what, I'm going to turn red, even though there's nobody around. Nobody anywhere. I'm going to turn red. Stupid thing. We all are programmed to stop for lights when there's nobody around, because we have no judgment. And because somebody could materialize out of no place. You know, like they'll have stealth mode on or something like that. Romulan technology. And all of a sudden, you'll be in trouble. So you have to stop at those red lights. So I'm cussing at the red lights. And I realized, what am I yelling? Who am I yelling at? I can't be yelling at one light, because I'm yelling at the whole pattern of many lights turning red for me. I'm like, give me a break already. What do you want from me? Who am I speaking to? The traffic light king? Am I speaking to God? Am I speaking to fate? I don't know. I had to ask myself, who am I talking to? And that's when I heard the car horn because I was sitting at a green light thinking. And then I get home and I'm on the internet. And yeah, of course, that's where you do a lot of the yelling and screaming. Especially if you spend any time in IRC. But using the Firefox browser, which is what everybody has been telling me to do lately. Everybody has been telling me Firefox will solve all your problems because Mozilla hasn't been doing it for me. Explorer, I just have never trusted. But now all of a sudden, I tell me if this ever happened to you. I was using Firefox. I go into Google and I'm typing in a search term. And I'm putting it in double quotes because it's something I want an exact match for. But it has a word like don't in it. And I hit the apostrophe. And when I hit the apostrophe, the little find bar in the bottom of the screen decides to open up. And all of a sudden I'm searching the actual page instead of the whole internet. And I'm like, wow, you know, I must have typed something wrong. So I wipe everything out and do it again. It happens again. So I start screaming. What in God's name is going on here? I say to the browser, what are you doing? Stop this. Stop doing this because there's no way around it. I need that apostrophe in there and it's refusing to accept it. It's acting on my apostrophe and putting it someplace else. Most frustrating thing in the world. So, you know, that went on for a while and I finally was able to open up another browser and then I searched on the internet to see if anybody else had reported this. And sure enough, a whole bunch of people have been complaining about this for years. And apparently Firefox doesn't believe in fixing these things. Another problem they have is cutting and pasting. Every now and then, when you go to paste something, it doesn't work. It just doesn't paste. It's in your buffer. You've cut it or you've copied it, but it does not paste. And yeah, that's been mentioned many times too. So frustration. It's what makes us yell out at inanimate objects or things that just exist in our minds. But I got to tell you, it feels good. It really does. And speaking of yelling at things that you really have no control over, one of our favorite features, you know what that music means. Yes, it's time for SUVs in the News, the feature that demonstrates to you how the SUV mentality is a mental illness that threatens to destroy our entire nation, if not the entire world, if it's not stopped. Oh my God, yesterday driving into this city, just the number of people that were doing stupid things driving SUVs. What's wrong with them? What is wrong with you? You're out there. I know you're listening. You're listening. In fact, you can call us. 631-632-9872. We'll be taking phone calls in about 20 minutes or so. And I do want to hear from you. I want to hear what's going on in your mind. Why do you do things? Like this one guy, when I was driving westbound into the city, I'm in the left lane, he's in the right lane. Never mind that I have the smart car. That fact is lost on people driving these huge machines. But what he did was he just swerved over into the left lane in front of me. I mean, it wasn't ultra dangerous. It wasn't good. Wasn't very nice, but just swerves in front, no signal, nothing. I'm gonna go here. Tough. That's the way it is. And then later on, like maybe about 3 minutes later, he makes another left turn. Signals. He signals. What is the difference? Is there like a special left turn, and then like the no frills left turn? What is it exactly that's going through your mind? That's what I want to know. Then I saw an SUV cut off another SUV, and then the SUV war started. Where they were giving each other the fingers and cutting each other off and speeding up. I pulled back and I just wanted to see what's going to happen here. Who's going to win? And finally, when they both got confused and slowed down, I passed by. I wanted to see what kind of people are driving these things. What, kind of sorry-ass individual generates so much hatred and testosterone and stuff like that? Well, one of the women was about 19 years old, I'd say, and the other one was about 45 and had her kids with her. Mental illness, yeah. Okay, let's take a look at the stories. And the rules, of course, for SUVs in the News is very simple. This has to be prepared less than an hour before the program begins, and it has to include stories that that have taken place in the last couple of days. Can't be old SUV stories. Have to be new. Gloucester County Sheriff's investigators have seized an SUV suspected to be the vehicle that fled an accident scene on July 25th. Well, that happened on July 25th, but this is a new development. They found it. And this vehicle hit three cars on Route 17 in the... Okay, you know what? Is this a joke? Is somebody messing with me? All right, what paper did this come from? TheDailyPress.com. What paper is that? Can we check into this? Because I don't know. All right, I'll tell you what's making me suspicious here. After hitting three cars on Route 17 in the Ordinary community, the community's named Ordinary. Is there any community anywhere in this country called Ordinary? I know there should be a lot of them. But what a weird name. Chief Deputy Mike Nicely said... Nicely? Nicely, that's his name? His name is an adverb? All right, well, anyway, he said today the SUV was found behind a house in York County in the Seaford community. What state is this? Part of the problem when I print these things out is it sometimes doesn't say where exactly it is. Route 17, Ordinary, Seaford community. Nicely credited calls to the crime line. Oh, Nicely, the guy Nicely. I'm sorry, I read it as the word again. The cop with the ridiculous name of Nicely credited calls to the crime line, which is a toll-free number where police accept information about wrongdoing, with information that led to the Seaford residence. The calls were based on an article in the aforementioned Daily Press, which detailed the accident on August 12th. Daily Press. What else we have here? A single car accident made a mess of rush hour traffic in Savannah, Georgia on President Street Extension. An SUV flipped into the median just after 5 p.m. yesterday. Police had to block the eastbound lanes for a few minutes to help get it cleaned up. Nobody appeared to be seriously hurt, but traffic was backed up for well over a mile. Never see that? SUVs just flip over. No reason. Someone hit the flip button. This is a bit of a tragic story here in the local area. A newly married Queens woman was killed yesterday when she turned in front of an SUV as she moved her car to avoid an alternate side parking ticket. She was pronounced dead at the scene of the 12:15 p.m. crash, Hillside Avenue, 121st Street. Some crazy driver just hit her and took her away. I know it's an accident, but it's a big tragedy for my family, one of her relatives said. Interesting, the driver, whose name was not released, stayed at the scene. Witnesses said he jumped out of his vehicle and began throwing rocks at apartment windows to get the attention of neighbors. He tried to help her, then he started getting panicky and looking for help. And in another story, this one from Pennsylvania, Steve Peck was driving through Hanover Sunday afternoon when he saw the vehicle in front of him hit a boy on a bicycle running over his leg. Peck said the boy, who police identified as 15-year-old Justin Bush, was following two of his friends on bikes in the first block of Carlisle Street about 2:15 p.m. They crossed Carlisle Street in front of oncoming vehicles. Bush of Hanover hadn't quite cleared the intersection when his bike collided with a gray or light blue SUV. Bush's leg was hit by the vehicle as it left the scene. The impact spun him around and dragged him to where his leg was under the rear tire. The driver who hit Bush stopped for a moment but then left the scene. I guess he figured, not much more I can do. You know, that's something I've heard a lot. People drive these things, I guess the same mentality of swerving in front of people and intimidating and getting behind you. When you do something wrong, let me get away with it. Let me get out of here as fast as I can. Okay, from Canada, the RCMP have released the name of the 2-year-old Surrey boy killed when his father accidentally ran over him as he backed out of his driveway. Charlie Schill ran behind the family's SUV on Saturday as his father reversed the vehicle. The toddler was rushed to hospital, where he died a short time later. The Surrey RCMP say the devastated parents hope lessons learned in the tragedy can be used to prevent other such accidents. I don't say what the lessons exactly are, except maybe you can't see people in these vehicles sometimes. Lots of times, actually. The time I got smacked by an SUV. The driver's excuse was, "Oh, I didn't even see you. Your car is so small." It wasn't the smart car, it was a different car. And it wasn't really that small a car, it's just, you're driving this mammoth vehicle, you can't see the ground. Alright, here's a little bit of SUV mentality for you from the government. While New Mexico Lieutenant Governor Diane Denish on Monday was touring the scene of recent flooding in Martinez Town, her SUV was getting her into trouble. Albuquerque Fire Chief Robert Ortega fired off a press release Monday, noting that Denish's state-issued SUV was parked in front of a fire hydrant while she attended the function with local politicos and dignitaries. A press release? Why not a ticket? Press release. My God. If I had to say something to the lieutenant governor, said Ortega, I would ask her in the future to make sure she parks in areas that are set aside for parking. Denish's office says she is innocent. Okay, how do you get there? How do you get to innocence when you park in front of a fire hydrant and you're not a fire truck? How are you innocent? Did somebody construct the fire hydrant while you were parked there? Well, okay. They say that Denish's chief of staff, Judith Espinoza, was driving and parking. Oh, okay, they're pinning it on somebody else. And Espinoza, in a statement read over the phone, said, "I saw the space. It was the only space available. I pulled up behind the car and never saw the fire hydrant." You can't see a kid. You can't see a fire hydrant. You can't really see anything that's not of immediate interest, I suppose. Monday's incident, however, was not the first time that Denish's SUV has turned around and bit her. On November 20th, a red light camera at San Mateo and Montgomery, we all know that intersection, caught it running a red light. She was issued a $100 ticket. But as for the fire hydrant, nobody was ticketed. Just a press release was issued. Unbelievable. Acrobatic SUVs. SUV leaps over fence along I-15. This is out of Victorville. Where in God's name is Victorville? I really should know these things, shouldn't I? California, okay. It was a horrific crash that, if it had involved another vehicle, could have ended fatally. Now, I don't like that paragraph, because if you read it a different way, it's making it sound like this vehicle was safe and that if you had been in a different vehicle, it would have ended badly. What it means is, if another vehicle had been anywhere near this careening monster, that they probably would have been killed. Continuing, as it was the 23-year-old woman whose SUV rolled two or three times Sunday morning, leaping the fence and landing on Mariposa Road, emerged with cuts and a broken arm. The Long Beach driver was driving northbound on Interstate 15 at about 60 to 70 miles per hour in the fast lane at about 11:30 a.m. According to witnesses, a black Honda Civic with tinted windows moved from the far right lane and cut her off. She swerved to the left to avoid getting hit, then swerved to the right, then lost control and rolled. Okay, you know, I can't count the number of times I've been cut off, many of them by SUVs. But the vehicles I drive do not get out of control when you have to make a quick turn. Even going 60 or 70 miles per hour, unless it's a hairpin turn of some sort. But SUVs tend to just roll over all the time. How about this one? A Marlborough, Massachusetts woman said and a 7-year-old boy were taken to hospitals yesterday after the SUV they were in drove off Interstate 495 and rolled over. Danielle Martin of Marlborough was taken by ambulance to UMass Memorial Medical Center in Worcester with minor injuries. The boy who officials declined to name because of his age. Well, I don't understand this. He's not accused of a crime. Why can't you name a 7-year-old who got injured? Is there somehow shame in that, or I don't know. I don't understand the logic. Anyway, he was traveling with Martin and was taken to the hospital as a precautionary measure. All the people in the crash were wearing seatbelts, which was a good thing, according to authorities. But really, rolling over, tumbling everywhere. Okay, in Frankfurt. This is not Germany. This is Frankfurt. Where is this? It's in New York, I believe. Okay. It's from the Evening Telegram. Police report no leads as to the whereabouts of a man who ran his vehicle through a DWI checkpoint last week, striking a police officer in the process. Actually, I'm sorry. This story is a week old. But it came out yesterday. Tuesday night, Frankfurt Town Police were conducting a routine traffic checkpoint screening for drunk drivers on Dyke Road when Utica resident Corey Hines pulled up to the location in a silver sports utility vehicle at about 9:30 p.m. In speaking to Hines and his female passenger, police noticed a clear plastic bag in the vehicle's center console and suspected that it contained drugs. When officers asked Hines to pull off to the side of the road for further investigation, Hines accelerated, speeding through the checkpoint and sideswiping lead officer James Getman. Getman, what a great name for a cop. Getman. Anyway, Getman was struck by the SUV's rearview mirror. How? Wouldn't it be the side view mirror? You had to be inside the car to get struck by the rearview mirror. Yeah. Anyway, he got struck by that in the passenger side door, knocking him to the ground. So they know who this guy is, but they can't find him. So if you know where Corey Hines is, somewhere in New York, tell him he's got an appointment with some cops who are kind of angry. Continuing in New York, Syracuse police are investigating a hit-and-run. It happened on the 3900 block of South Salina Street late Sunday night. Police say Dolphus Harlow, 60 years old, had just ended her shift at Rite Aid and was crossing Salina Street at Fillmore Avenue when she was hit by a gray-colored SUV. Witnesses say the driver of the SUV turned into the Burger King entrance, drove through the parking lot, and exited onto Ballantyne Road. No arrests have been made because they can't find the person. The victim was taken to the hospital for head injuries. And this final bit, which comes from a site called streetsblog.org, indicates there might be some hope. Might be some hope. 2 years ago, Slate had a piece noting that California weight restrictions against vehicles over 6,000 pounds prohibited SUVs from many streets, but nobody realized this because people just thought the signs were for delivery trucks. For instance, a Hummer H2 weighs 8,600 pounds. Yeah. It seems most of the ordinances were written with trucks in mind, not SUVs, and so the secret SUV ban went unenforced. Now, since this piece is a bit dated, it's unclear whether authorities have actually started banning SUVs, started to rewrite laws, or are continuing to ignore the problem. And the question here is, does anybody know if there are any New York area equivalents? Well, this writer says, I believe the Brooklyn Bridge has a limit of 6,000 pounds. The Brooklyn Bridge does not allow trucks over 3 tons, which would mean all those municipal workers would be out of luck, too. But the list of technically prohibited vehicles include Hummers, GMC Yukons, Ford Expeditions / Excursions, Chevrolet Suburbans, Cadillac Escalades, and BMW X5 by a mere 8 pounds. And this would be a great press campaign, wouldn't it? Yeah, and someone suggests that people start taking photos of the big SUVs crossing the Brooklyn Bridge, including the license plates, post it online, send it to the tabloids, the DOT, the NYPD, everybody. And maybe there'll be some hope of getting these things off at least one road. Okay, our phone number is 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Let us know what's on your mind. And as soon as we get a few calls coming in, we'll go to the phones. Meanwhile, we can go to the letters, though, because we always get lots of letters, and it's a great time reading what's coming in. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear what you're saying. Dear Emmanuel, I've been listening to your programs for several years now, and more often than not, find myself agreeing with what you say on air. However, I thought the way you mocked the story you read by Eric Harris a couple of weeks ago was in bad taste. I think what happened in Columbine was an incredible tragedy, and that both Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold were very disturbed when they committed the act. But I don't see how it is useful to pull apart and poke fun at something that Harris wrote 4 years before the event even happened. If the story was written in 1995, as you mentioned, then Harris was around 14 years old when he wrote it. I can't speak for other people, but the story you read seemed to me like pretty typical 14-year-old male stuff that I too wrote about when I was that age. Pretend wars, defeating bad guys, hanging out with your friends, etc. I seriously doubt that Harris had, at the time, had any intention or idea that he would one day become such an infamous mass murderer. Perhaps if there were some early warning signs and these had been recognized, then something could have been done to stop what would eventually happen. But having read many of the recently released documents written by the two of them, it seems to me like they were victims of severe bullying in high school and felt utterly isolated and hopeless. This in no way justifies what they did as a result, but it appears that even now, people are still struggling to find a reason as to why it happened and looking for something to blame it on, with the usual targets of heavy metal music, Marilyn Manson, violent video games, and movies receiving the most attention. Very few appear willing to accept that the real reason why Harris and Klebold acted as they did was perhaps because they didn't fit into the high school system and its dominant groups of athletes, social elite, scholars, and the mainstream in general, and responded to years of hate, taunting, isolation, and being made to feel worthless. When the massacre happened in 1999, I was also in my senior year of high school and had been treated like an outcast for many years for reasons that aren't important. While I never contemplated anything even close to what these two did, I could certainly feel part of what they had been going through and understand their motive, perhaps more so than someone who has never been in that position. Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold killed many innocent people, but I don't believe they weren't victims themselves, and I don't believe they deserve to be mocked, as you put it, especially for something that was written 4 years prior to the event when they were just young teenage boys messing around and writing fantasy stories, signed Terry. Well, Terry, thanks for your thoughtful letter, but I have to disagree. You know, if you go around killing people, massacring, being an overall jerk, I think you do deserve to be mocked for anything you did. I just do. I'm sorry. It's, you know, if Idi Amin was bullied as a kid, I still think the guy's a complete horrible person who did horrible things to horrible people, and there's no excuse for that. And yeah, maybe it's a cheap shot to find a story that was released that shows what a bad writer they were, maybe, and what silly ideas they had. Not necessarily any indication that they were going to do something bad. I think that's a big mistake to look at a story about somebody getting into a fight or something and saying, this is proof that because these guys wrote a similar story, you're going to go down the same road. No, it's not. But when you play that game, I don't know, I just think you sort of deserve cheap shots in the future. And yeah, it was a cheap shot, no question about it. Okay, let's take some phone calls. 631-632-9872, and good evening. You are on the air.
Hi, Emmanuel. This is Calvin. I'm actually calling with, and I have some questions from IRC. The people on Off the Wall IRC have some questions for you, and I wanted to say a shout-out to Elmo, Bobson, and Cassandra.
Okay. And what's the I'm trying to get your phone mic to work. I don't think it's working properly, but continue talking and tell us your question.
The question is, what is the music that you play at the beginning of both the show and at the beginning of SUVs in the News?
Okay. Hang on a second. I'm almost, you know, the board's falling apart now. That piece is from Philip Glass. And it's a film called Nyagatsi or something. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it, but if you look up Philip Glass, you'll see this this album featured. And the two pieces are Intensive Time and Point Blank.
And they're both on that same album.
Yeah, they're both on that album.
Thank you very much. I really enjoy your show, and I really enjoyed this year's Hope. And you have a good evening.
Thanks. Thanks for calling.
No problem.
And we'll see you at the next Hope. Let me get a tone. Yeah, you see, that's part of the problem. You know what's static? It's hard to do this every single week, but apparently there's no other way to fix this. Hang on. Reaching my hand in, fiddling with the wires because it's apparently the only way to get anything fixed around here. All right, I'm sorry, folks. So we had a few calls there, but we lost them because of all the nonsense. 631-632-9872. Please give us a call. We'll do the best we can as far as trying to get this board to work. More mail. A friend of mine works with U.S. Border Patrol here in Arizona. He told me about a story about the Ford Explorers. The Border Patrol kept breaking the Explorers in their day-to-day activities, driving them off-road, and Ford kept repairing them. Ford finally sent an engineer down to find out what was going wrong with the vehicles. He arrived and said, "Show me what you guys are doing." So an agent took the Ford engineer out on a patrol. While driving around on those dirt roads and horse paths, the engineer exclaimed, "That's what's wrong. They weren't designed for this," meaning off-roading. Ford tough. Yeah, signed Chris. Thank you very much for writing in, Chris. Truth in Advertising, indeed. Good evening, you're on the air. Speak up, please. No, you're gone. Okay, good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, actually, the previous caller, I think, took my question. I was just asking about the Philip Roth song. The movie's called Nagoya Katsi, by the way.
Nagoya Katsi. I knew I was going to pronounce it wrong.
Oh, it was pretty close.
Oh, okay. How am I? I think I hit the wire finally. Could you say something else?
Sure. Should I just keep talking?
Yeah, okay. I think we got it now. Was there anything else on your mind?
Yes. I had a question about Hope. I was listening to the audio files online.
Oh, I lost it again. Keep talking.
What was the numbers you guys keep using to refer to each other during the Hope conference? I think you were numbers.
There were numbers. Everybody was assigned a number at the conference, and we referred to people by those numbers. In fact, everybody who was on staff was known as number two.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't that there were individual numbers for individual people. That seemed kind of freaky to hear that, you guys referring to each other as like number two, number six, or whatever.
Yeah, it was pretty freaky, and I think that was part of why we were doing it, to freak people out a little bit.
Well, it worked.
Okay, good. Always happy to oblige. Thanks for your call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm standing in the Atlantic Ocean and just wanted to see if I had signal.
You're standing in the Atlantic Ocean?
I am.
Well, are you in trouble? Or do you?
Wait. Hold on.
Send the Coast Guard or something?
Get it.
All right. Well, are you trying to get here from Cuba? Is that the deal?
Just landed.
Yeah, because you have to be on land, apparently, to get citizenship. If you're still in the ocean, they won't give you citizenship.
Well, I actually am standing in it, so it's official.
All right. Well, it sounds like it's kind of windy there, too. Where exactly are you?
I'm at Robert Moses.
Oh, Robert Moses. Okay, that's cool. How are the waves?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I was always curious if you get signal standing in the water here.
I don't know if that's dangerous or not. No, I don't think it is. You're on a cell phone, standing in the water. That's not dangerous, right?
Oh, I mean, if there's lightning around.
Yeah, you know, because you sometimes do something dumb, and then you realize after you did it, boy, that was dumb. standing in a puddle
tomorrow.
And holding... Yeah. Okay, well, I think this is the first time we've ever gotten the call in
that's what I was hoping.
My entire history on the air of somebody standing in the water calling like that. Are there many people there right now?
Yeah, it actually sounds like I'm walking, so further away. I'm walking west, so I might drop out.
Uh-huh. Is there any way we can get the sound of a wave crashing down?
Sound of what?
The sound of a wave crashing down. That would be a nice sound.
Okay, well, I'm going.
I don't want you to, you know, get caught up in the wake or anything.
Well, today, it's not really that rough.
Uh-huh.
You can pretty much walk right in. Hold on a second. Okay, here it comes.
Okay. Every sounds of waves.
Did you get that?
Can you do it one more time, please?
I can't really hear you because they're loud to me.
If you could do two waves, that'd be good.
How's that one?
Could you do two in a row?
All right, here's a good one. Hold on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The sound of a wave on a cell phone, that's like nothing I've ever heard.
There you go.
Awesome. They're really good. Okay, listen, get
the phone now.
Get back onto dry land.
I am.
All right. Thanks thanks for your call.
No. Talk to you later.
All right, take care. Whew. Oh, there's always a first here, isn't there? 631-632-9872. Calls from the ocean. That's so cool. I never thought of that. I mean, I was on the air from the ocean, but I was on a boat. I didn't think of actually being in the water. Dear Emmanuel, I listened to the 8:15 show, the one last week. I thought I'd emphasize the importance of the distinction between the terms war and occupation as they relate to the Iraq mess. Calling it a war is what allows the Republicans to argue that withdrawal amounts to cutting and running. Yeah, you know, I never even picked up on that, but you're absolutely right. There's no such thing as win, lose, or surrender in an occupation. So the cut-and-run argument is moot. If only this point were made clear by Democrats and mainstream media, signed Erlin. Erlin, you draw a really good point there. And that's true. That's why it is an occupation. It should be called an occupation. Because, yes, you know, you can end an occupation. And it's not cutting and running. This is not a war. And if you say it's a war, you're buying into it and you're being led around. No question about that. Speaking of war, opposition among Americans to the war in Iraq has reached a new high, with only about a third of respondents saying they favor it. That's according to a poll released yesterday. Just 35% of 1,033 adults polled say they favor the war in Iraq. 61% say they oppose it, the highest opposition noted in any poll, this is a CNN poll, actually, any CNN poll since the conflict began more than 3 years ago. Despite the rising opposition to the war, guess what? President Bush said the U.S. will not withdraw from Iraq while he is president. Well, then, you know what that means. We have to get a different president. And today, this happened today, I can't believe this. The U.S. Marine Corps said today it's been authorized to recall thousands of Marines. Now, this doesn't mean they're defective. They're not recalling them like they recall SUVs. They're recalling them to active duty. These are guys who have been to Iraq, been to Afghanistan, done their time, gone through hell, and now, because they were so popular and because it worked so well, they're being asked for an encore performance. Yeah, thousands of Marines. They've done this to the Army. They've already done this to members of the Army. And they're saying the reason they have to do this is because of a shortage of volunteers for duty in Iraq and Afghanistan. Why do you think that is? People take a dim view of getting blown up for no reason. People take a dim view of getting blown up at all. It's not necessarily the best thing. But now people are getting blown up all over the place, thanks to our president who led us into this mess, who started this mess, and for whom the responsibility for every single death, civilian, soldier, enemy, friend, is... wait, how should I end that sentence? For whom the responsibility is held in his hands. It should be held, yes. Anyway, this is the first time the Marines have had to use the involuntary recall since the early days of the Iraq combat. The Army has ordered back about 14,000 soldiers since the start of the war. Unbelievable. I really feel for people who are caught up in this and have no way to get out. When I was driving the smart car through one of the poorer neighborhoods in Brooklyn yesterday, there were all these, you know, discount shoe stores and pawnbrokers and check cashing and OTB shops. And then at the end of the block was Marine Recruiting Center. And I was thinking to myself, you know, they might just as well put a big exit sign right on top of that place, because that is the only way many people can get out of poor neighborhoods, is to join the military and be sent off somewhere to die for whatever reason they're told to. I just think, you know, it's time you guys get angry. Get angry at the right people. I want to hear people who are in the military, people who are in the Marines. How do you feel about this? Now, I know you just have to follow the orders and things like that. And I'm not suggesting mutinies that could open people up for court martials and put people in dangerous positions and things like that. But I am asking whether or not you have the ability to speak up in any sense, especially those of you who have already served and are home now and are facing this kind of thing. For instance, would it be okay for you guys to dress up in your uniforms, your Marine uniforms? You get to keep those, right? Right? You don't have to give those back when you come home. Assuming you get to keep the uniforms, can you dress up in those things and surround the White House with however many people you can get who agree with you, who are also in the Marines, and just hold up signs saying, I was lied to, I was victimized, my friends died for no reason, this occupation, has to end. Can you do that? Because I know a lot of you don't believe in what's going on over there. A lot of you realize that this is a big waste of time, and look what it's done. It's made the world into such a unpleasant, unsafe place. Iran now is becoming one of the heroes of the Mideast to much of the population, because they're standing up to the United States with their nuclear program that maybe one day will be a big threat. Maybe. It's possible. You have the insurgency in Iraq stronger than ever. Most violent month in the history of the conflict last month. American soldiers continuing to die. Iraqis dying by scores. You have the Mideast conflict with Hezbollah and Israel, which left Hezbollah stronger than ever. I think it's the worst military move Israel has ever made, probably, is that ill-fated whatever it was. And now Hezbollah are seen as heroes. Great. Nicely done. Nicely played. So you have all this misguided military policy. You have people dying for no reason. And you have a region that is more unstable than ever. And meanwhile, back home, things are just getting more and more messed up. And if, God forbid, you ever really need to defend yourselves against a true enemy, you won't be prepared. So ask yourself, is it really a patriotic duty to just follow blindly these orders? Because this kind of thing can lead to really, really bad stuff. Okay, I guess we have time for one more call, maybe two. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello, USB?
Yes, go ahead, speak up.
Well, I just wanted to talk to Emmanuel.
You're on the air right now, you're talking to him.
Oh, I'm sorry, Emmanuel. To answer your question, although I wasn't a Marine, I was in the United States Navy.
Uh-huh.
To sign to go into the service, you are now considered government property, and there's also rules that apply to that as far as protesting. You sign away almost your rights to civil protest. So if they were to do that, they would probably be arrested and thrown in jail.
You're saying even after you're not on duty, you're not allowed to protest? You're not allowed to stand and hold a sign and dress up in your uniform? You can't do that?
Member of the Armed Services of the United States, you give up your rights. Yeah, you're considered government property.
My God, that's sick. That really is sick.
I agree with you. When I was in the Navy, I'm a personal witness to this. I know some people who we were down in the Bahamas on shore leave had gotten a really bad sunburn when they were out on leave. The burn was so bad they could not perform their duties when they went back to the ship, and they had to go to sick bay. They were brought up on charges for damaging government property. That was the charge against them.
Well, you know, not that I don't believe you, but I sure would like to get some confirmation of this from other people as well, because that sounds so insane. But listen, we're going to have to end it there because we're pretty much out of time.
Okay.
Thanks for your call, though.
All right.
And thanks, everybody else, for calling in. We'll try to get to more calls next week. And you can write to us, otw@2600.com. But, you know, it's never been more important to speak up and just talk to other people. Share your thoughts. Don't be a sheep. Yeah. Don't stand back and just let it all happen. Because you do have a say. Everybody does have some say. Question is whether or not they're willing to say something. Hey, speaking of somebody who says something from the new Neil Young album, this is a song with probably the best lyrics of anything I've heard this year. Take a listen. See you next week.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.